Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. If you can hear really loud noises of wind, it's not me. It is so windy outside. And wasn't it this time last week? It was really lovely weather. Anyways, we're resorting to talking about the weather. I hope you're well. I've just been so mad busy. I feel like I've barely come up for air, but it's been a really good week. I got to have a couple of days at the Natural and Organic Products Show, which is kind of with my other hat on, the other stuff that I do. I'm recommending natural products and being up to date with everything that's going on with the holistic world. It was just fantastic to be back, like properly back at an exhibition. I honestly never thought it would happen. It's been, of course, 3 years since the last one. So it was, it was a thing. And it was really well attended and really good to be there and see some of the natural and organic brands that I've known about for years and years. And then some new ones that have just kind of come on board into the market. It's just really exciting to see that market growing and growing. I've often said that when I wrote my first book, Imperfectly Natural Women, it was, my goodness, 15 and a half years ago. And there were literally five natural makeup brands then, five, and I really had to do the research to find them. And now it's just amazing. The skincare, the range of natural skincare was incredible. And of course, all the food and all the natural products and supplements and just everything. Some really amazing, unique stuff. And it was fantastic. So I got to see Dr. Rangan Chatterjee there. So lovely to see him. And we have to hook up something together, to do a podcast together. And also Dale Pinnock, the medicinal chef. Lovely to see him again. Dale's been a guest on the podcast and he works with us as well with me, my sober coach training. He's so knowledgeable. I love working with Dale because he's really got that handle on exactly what we should eat and certainly what we should eat for recovery, you know, for that kind of medicinal diet that we need when we first ditch the booze. So it was a good few days, but it just was a little bit exhausting. So I feel like I'm in catch-up mode as we go through the rest of the week. Anyways, in the Sober Club, it's been super busy because there were a few people kind of did those fess up posts, you know, like, okay, here I am, need some accountability. I'll read you a couple of little segments without naming names, obviously. One person says, I did a 90 days sober up to January and then I thought I could moderate. It's taken a few months, but I am pretty much back where I was, daily wine o'clock. Somebody else says, it's day four for me, not sleeping well, early nights, reading your book, Janie, along with doing the work. So I am feeling a little bit more peaceful in the morning, which is good. Anyway, there were a few of these posts, a whole bunch of posts from people saying they had tripped up, they'd kind of gone back to drinking. I think one woman had had something like, I don't know, 3 years and then gone back to drinking. And someone else was thinking of an event that was coming up in a few weeks' time and looking forward to, I think it was a wedding or something. And that voice starts to come along in the head saying, oh, well, wouldn't it be nice? I mean, you can't celebrate without booze after all. So wouldn't it be nice just to have one? And so it's been a week of that. And it really got me thinking, okay, we really do have to do more around this accountability piece. So in the Sober Club this week, we've got an accountability challenge and people are having to post every single day to say where they're at. And it really makes a difference. Somebody said, I had an intense kind of urge, but I just did not want to have to fess up tomorrow morning on the group. So I got through it. And, you know, there always is another way to scratch that itch. There really is. Somebody else said, one of the guys in our group said, I've just joined up. Drink has taken over my life. Time to make some changes. I've always been sporty. And 6 or 7 years ago, I was in great shape, training 6 days a week, running marathons, only drinking on Saturdays. But unfortunately, over the years, that one day a week turned to two, then three, then to five, and it became the norm. And that's so often the case, isn't it? We've got something in our lives that keeps us accountable, like doing sports or some kind of work where we have to, I don't know, drive early in the morning or whatever. We have something that kind of keeps us in check. And then as soon as that starts to slip away for whatever reason, we're back. We're straight back down the slippery slope, back into that alcohol trap. And it is a trap. And it can get us if we don't, you know, remain on top of it, basically. I think that's what doing this little challenge in the club this week has really shown me. Somebody else here in the club says, I managed 5 months last year and now I'm so cross with myself for not continuing. I'm afraid I associate having fun with drinking, so I'm worried I'll be seen bored if I'm not drinking. And I also use it as stress relief. And I know that I feel so much better when I don't drink. So, yeah, it's so true, isn't it? But we still have these associations with, you know, how much more fun we are, as that person said, you know, how much more relaxed, how much more confident, whatever the hell it is. It seems to allegedly be cured by alcohol. Bizarre that, on account of the Emperor's not actually wearing any clothes. None of us are more fun with alcohol or more relaxed. You know, we just think we are. But yeah, it's been a very interesting week seeing a lot of these posts with people kind of, you know, recognizing that they do need accountability. And of course, you know, of course, coaching is can really be massively beneficial for this. And I do offer some very limited one-to-one coaching, and I'm trained in EFT and Matrix and all kinds of fabulous, wonderful therapeutic work. But there's obviously only so many clients that can do that kind of work. And sometimes coaching can be prohibitively expensive. So I am starting this accountability program, which will be a very low cost package. So if that's something you're interested in, drop me a message or an email and see if you want to be part of that, because it's a really low cost way of remaining accountable. You don't have to be a Sober Club member. Obviously, it's great if you are, because you've got all the other stuff in the Sober Club of living your best life. But this is for anyone who wants that accountability, that one-to-one accountability, someone literally having their back, you know, being your champion, holding the vision for you. That's what I want to do. But without the time commitment or the big financial commitment of the coaching. So drop me a message if it's something you're interested in. Just mark your message, accountability package. And let me introduce you to this week's guest. I think I just came across the Sober Teacher on Instagram, and I thought that'd be an interesting chat. Let's just, you know, let's just see where things are at in the world of education, at least from Vicky's perspective. So here she is.
My guest is Vicky Lang, who is known as Sober Teacher. I think that's right, isn't it, Vicky?
Yep.
Yeah. So we've kind of says what it is on the tin, right? But yeah, let's dig into your story. I mean, I find the whole connection with drinking and the education profession, I think it's fascinating. But also, I'm really interested in your story, you know, as a mum, and how you sort of went through that whole postnatal depression thing underpinned by alcohol. So I think we've kind of shared a bit of your story right there. But I'd love to hear it from you. What happened? I know you were drinking for an awful lot of years before things changed.
Yeah, I think it's part, obviously, as many conversations happen on the lots of different varieties of podcasts and other things, other reading. A lot of people start drinking when they can, because that's our culture. And I think that was something for me that I went through. And I never saw myself having a problem in those early years. So I think sort of 17 to 25, probably not really a problem as such. I wouldn't have called it that. And from my perspective, I drank as a normal drinker. I never had an issue. I never felt like I had an issue growing up. And it was just something that unfortunately spiraled for me very, very quickly, specifically around the time of having children. I used to sort of normalize it and think that the day that I'd had with the kids, for example, that rewards, you know, I needed that. I felt like I was
me too.
That.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really, really difficult thing to overcome. And especially when you're around and surrounded by other mums doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's really true. It needs highlighting more, doesn't it? This mummy wine culture, it's such a thing. Yeah. And we're not given the tools and the skills to kind of cope with the onslaught of you know, your first child particularly, or if you've got more than one little one. Yeah, it's completely exhausting. And the only way we know how to cope is to turn to booze. It's sad, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I do think there is a massive, massive issue with it. And I think when I started out on this sober journey, for me, I've got a kind of strands that I sort of themes that run through my journey, I think, really. And one of them is being a mum, and one of them is being a professional, hence why on Instagram I call myself the sober teacher, because for me, it's highlighted many different problems perhaps that I was sort of struggling with in my life that I wasn't dealing with. And I was literally covering up with, you know, going home every night. It would always be after 7 o'clock. I wasn't one of those people drinking in the day, but it was always, you know, get the kids into bed as quickly as possible because I need a drink and I deserve it. And, you know, get into bed. And that's just how I rolled for many, many years.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I mean, hindsight's lovely and everything, but I think I look back and I think, God, you know, the amount of things that I missed out, the amount of, you know, Sundays that I would spend in bed so poorly with, where was I as a mum at that point?
I know, it's heartbreaking, isn't it? That's my only regret, really, is just going back to it for a moment before we get into that. You know, and I know you've mentioned, you know, that you suffered from postnatal depression. Just describe that period for us a little bit, because I know there'll be people listening who either are going through the same thing or have been. And it's still another one of those massive taboos. We don't talk about it. We really don't. It's really seen as, you know, oh, well, you should be grateful. You've got a baby, you know, what the hell? Just talk us through that.
It was one of those creeping things. I never knew I had it. A couple of people said to me that I wasn't myself. I'd lost a lot of weight after my third child. Never had. Again, I look back, hindsight, but the first two children, so I've got two girls and a boy, and I never sort of saw myself as having a problem then. But the third, my little boy, I had him, and I lost so much weight dramatically afterwards. I was getting obsessed with things. And then a couple of people said, you know, I think you need to go to the doctors. So I went off to the doctor, spoke to the nurse, and I said in the nurse's room, it's not funny, but there's humour here, because I sat and said, I definitely haven't got postnatal depression. She said, there's the first sign you've just admitted that, you know, you're trying to deny that you've got it. And I was like, oh. And I think from then it sort of kicked in, and they put me on medication, which I had a few comments, family, friends making about the fact, shouldn't I be on medication? But I went on it. But obviously through that, I didn't realise the implications of me on medication. And I was on about, I'll be honest, 40 grams, I think, of citralopram, I think it's called.
Yeah.
I was also drinking a bottle of wine.
Oh my God, that was just about to be my next question. Please don't tell me they didn't ask you about your drinking. Yeah. Oh my God.
No. never once in the doctor.
Oh my God.
Never once.
Medication, that amount of medication on top of a bottle of wine a night. Oh my God.
It's serious.
God, it's shocking. It's so shocking that they don't consider it, isn't it? Oh my God. How on earth did you cope? It must have been awful.
I just think I completely lost my sense of self. I was obviously dealing with a baby and drinking and on medication, clearly visually not, you know, myself. I wasn't myself. I just became completely lost. And I think really that's probably where my sort of problem with alcohol started significantly. And it sort of spiraled from there. But, you know, I never understood the understand any implications of taking that medication and mixing it with alcohol. No. I honestly didn't think there was a problem.
Wow, bless you. Just still on that note, you know, if you could make a difference, you know, if you could change the way things are, what would have been helpful for you at that point? I mean, perhaps it would have been the medication without the booze, if someone could have signposted you there. But what else could have been helpful for you at that point? What did you need to hear when you were suffering from that postnatal depression?
I definitely got the support. I would say I did get the support from the NHS, and the nurses were brilliant. And you know, that they were so, one particular nurse in the surgery I go to is absolutely exceptional, and she was so supportive. But you kind of leave that doctor's surgery and then you're on your own again, and that's that feeling of isolation, and you know, you are on your own. And I feel like perhaps the services side of it, and having, you know, more networks maybe of support, and just the conversations around the awareness that I don't remember seeing, you know, this is only 5 years ago. I don't remember seeing much around postnatal depression and alcohol. I never saw that link made.
No.
No.
And where, you know, mummy culture, wine culture kind of sort of seeps in, unfortunately, I never had a chance because I was just so sort of delusional with that, you know, if I have a drink, it will make me sleep better and I feel better because I'm able to numb it, you know, and actually the support of perhaps some workshops, perhaps around something that, you know, would have, it's just the opening and increase of that awareness and education, which I'm a massive, you know, advocate for.
Of course. I mean, wouldn't it be great, you know, if the nurses and the people that are trained to listen to someone in your position, wouldn't it be great if they were able to say, you know, okay, you know, let's look at this holistically. Let's look at everything. Let's have a look at the nutrition you're putting in, because maybe your brain chemistry is out of whack, almost certainly, you know, obviously. Let's have a look at everything that's going on. What support can you get? You know, how can we connect you with other women? You know, and obviously, you know, let me share with you, you know, this will be the most exciting thing and the best thing you'll ever done, because you can make a great choice of not drinking, you know? And here's how you do that. I mean, God, there's so much change needed, isn't there? So anyways, how did you come through it, sweetie? How did you get the, you know, kind of wherewithal to sort it?
There was a mixture of things going on. I think I went away on a work trip, and one of my best friends that I work with, he's an incredible man, and we went on this work trip away to Euro Disney with a bunch of students, and we sat on this coach on the way there, and it's like 5 hours sitting on the coach. Anyway, we had a really good chat, and he turned around to me and said, I think you really need help, Vicky. And for whatever reason at that moment in time, it hit me like a brick. I was like, oh my God, I actually think I need help. Like I genuinely can't continue like this anymore. I got to a stage of having really awful thoughts. Obviously, because that's medication, alcohol mixing, it can't do your brain any good.
Yeah.
And I then was like, right. So I took myself off to therapy. I had a year and a half's worth of therapy I paid for privately because I was desperate is probably the wrong word, but I was desperate. I had to go and speak to someone and get professional help. Off I went, and this lady, again, incredible lady, amazing counsellor, she talked me through a lot of things that were going on underneath, and eventually I pulled myself out because I realised that alcohol is not doing me any favour whatsoever. So whatever way you perspective you look at it, it is not contributing at all to my health. So I thought, well, if I eradicate that, what's the implication going to be? So I took it out of my life in November, which would have been 2020. And to be honest, I haven't looked back, because I think the impact it has had on my life, the impact it's had on me as a mum, the impact it's had on my job are, you know, I'm almost at the end of my master's degree now. So I went back to university. I've just applied for my PhD because I now have the brain capacity and the energy to do it.
Yeah.
And I think I it was a turning point for me, somebody telling me that wasn't family, he's a colleague, that the fact I think I needed to really reflect and think, I need help. I can't continue.
It's hard to admit that, isn't it, to yourself sometimes? Very hard. Yeah. So what was it difficult for you when you took the alcohol out? How difficult did you find it in the early weeks? Or once you'd made the decision, was it kind of right, that's it, I'm focused?
So I never told anyone. Because I've got this thing, if I tell people that I'm making change, I think often it doesn't work. So I kept it to myself for the initial stages. Stopped drinking. I woke up one morning, it was a Sunday morning, and I felt so appalling. And I was like, that's it. I just sat in the bathroom and I thought, something has got to change, because I can't carry on living like this. So I got myself ready that day, and I've got the tattoo on my arm now, actually, of saying one day at a time, because I had to take one day at a time. It was as basic as that. And I just got through every day and I just kept going. And then about a week in, my husband said to me, are you not having a drink? And I was like, no, I haven't drunk a week. And he was like, oh, and he left it, because I think he must have thought something's going on here. And then I just carried on, and I've accessed a lot of help through Instagram. I am very open at work about my choice. I recently, much more recently, have come, I say come out, that's so cliche, but
no. it's the only word we can use. I did my coming out at 8 months.
Yeah, it gets to that thing, and I sort of looked into some of these conversations around coming out as a sober person, and in the end, I know that Sober Dave, I spoke to him about it, and he was just like, are you going to? And I was like, I don't know, because I'm scared, and yeah. I'm petrified that, you know, I can't tell you how much I love my job. I've been a teacher for 16 years now, and I genuinely got up this morning as excited as I did day one. So to me, the implication on coming out and losing the respect from my colleagues and my students and the organisation I work for.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Just pause there for a minute, because it's really interesting to use that word, though, isn't it? Because like, the whole idea that they would not respect you, in inverted commas, but it's an interesting choice of word. It's one I would have used, you know, that you would lose respect for having made a personal well-being choice. You know, it's bonkers. But I guess you were afraid of being judged or not included, left out of stuff, right?
Yeah. The terror that I had with going through waking up, you know, thinking, oh my God, what if someone finds my Instagram account? What if, you know, what if someone notices? I don't know. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but it turns out that actually my office at work is the safe space for me. And I've had some incredible support from my colleagues, my managers, and the feedback I've got and the difference they're seeing. So these people, obviously you spend more time at work than you do at home a lot of the time. So their feedback has been really hard to deal with, because they're like, you're different. You're so much more grounded, you're settled. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, was I that bad? But you just don't realize when you're in it. And I think I was scared. I was worried. I genuinely was worried I was going to lose my job, that they would find out this person, you know, that drunk all these years and had a problem. And
well, that's the other very interesting thing. You see, we so many people, I mean, number one, you know, I'm really pleased it worked out that way for you, because it nearly always does. Our fears are nearly always so much worse than how it actually is. You know, we're terrified of going out with friends, socializing, we're terrified of telling people at work. But if we're authentic about it, right, it's nearly always okay, isn't it? But you know what's interesting there is, I can't remember what you just said. I was just about to pick up on what was it you were just saying about I interrupted you and then I lost my train of thought. Carry on. I'm sure what you were saying was more interesting.
It's just I think it's around the respect you think that you're going to lose, that actually nothing's really changed in terms of my job and my role. If anything, I'm 100% better than I ever was at my job now, because I have clarity over my decisions, over my time management, over, you know, things that get thrown at me. I don't feel panicked anymore. I'm getting better sleep at night, so I'm able to deal with the day better, because that was another issue. I was on the sofa every night at 3 o'clock in the morning having absolute meltdowns that, you know, everything was going to go wrong the next day, heart palpitations. And that isn't healthy. And I think I look back and I remember thinking at the time, that's okay, but it's not, I needed someone to speak to me and say, that isn't okay.
Vicky, that isn't not, okay. Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. That we settle for less, don't we? What I was going to say was, your fear that you had that people would then assume that you had been as you say, a drunk. You know, the assumption is always, well, not always, but often, if you've stopped drinking, the assumption is, oh dear, you know, you must have been sort of in a skip every night, putting vodka on cornflakes or whatever. That's always the perception, isn't it? We so need to do more work raising awareness around grey area drinkers, because so many of us, so many people, you know, who are not in a skip, but they are drinking way more than they really want to, and then it's good for them, obviously, then it's healthy. So, you know, what happened with you said it was fine with your colleagues and you were authentically you and your life has got a million times better, which is just wonderful. But did it sort of open your eyes to anything going on with colleagues or the profession generally? Is it a profession where people drink a lot, or is it that all professions people drink a lot?
It's interesting. So I think, unfortunately, there's like misconceptions. I think if you're a professional, you know, I think for me, it was always that I should know better. So And the joke of it is that we get so many guest speakers in to talk about problems that then we go home and do almost the opposite of what we've got them to talk about. And I think it is a problem. And I think the conversations that happen in the staff room sometimes, you know, going, oh, just go and have a glass of wine, you know, that will sort it out. And actually, that isn't going to sort it out. That isn't going to fix things. And I think it's part of our culture, but I also think the education and any profession, actually, that there are issues there, because I do think you tend to lean on it because of the stress levels.
Yeah.
And it is a stressful job. It is, you know, it is hard. I work most weekends. I'm always planning. I'm always marking.
And what age group do you teach?
But I work in a college, so I teach from 16 to around 19.
Ah, right. Okay. So then on top of the question about the, you know, the education profession, then what about the kids? What are you finding there? Because that's another whole area that, you know, many of the people in the Sober Club, you know, will be sort of there once they've got through the early stages. They're kind of thinking, what the hell am I gonna do with my teenagers, as it were? Yeah. You know, what do you do? How do you handle the teenagers who come through your organizations? Because it's not simple, is it? We can't just say, don't even think about trying alcohol, you know, because that's just gonna make them, you know, it's gonna be worse, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, is it true what we hear, that do you think that young people and millennials are drinking less? I mean, my experience with my kids is that they're definitely drinking less than my age group did. But that when they do drink, they kind of binge drink.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's that. So we've got a mixture. I'd say that they're drinking a lot less than I would have done at that age, 100%. Like, they're a lot more aware. And I think there's a sort of thing that talks about the smoking sort of generation as they're the sort of new drinking generation. They're much more aware, the education's there. So I do think they're drinking a lot less, but if they're drinking, it is binge drinking. I had a student the other day say to me, I spent the whole day drinking yesterday, and I was like, whoa. So we have to raise things and deal with that. But I do think they're drinking less than my generation was. I think there is a lot more awareness. But again, that comes down to education. It comes down to things like setting up guest speakers, setting up, you know, organisations to come in and speak to the young people regarding, because often I've noticed as well, drugs and alcohol tend to get looped in the same thing. And then the focus becomes drugs. And actually, obviously, that's important, but actually alcohol is just as important to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We have to try to be careful, don't we, in separating that drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, it becomes almost just one holistic, you know, approach. And actually, it needs to be dual. It needs to be, we need to deal with the drugs and talk about drugs, but we also need to look at alcohol. And really interestingly, so in last year, the beginning of the term, I got Dave in and Sarah Drage to come in and do a guest speaker to like a few hundred of our kids. And the impact, first of all, they were incredible, but the impact that had was shocking. As a teacher, to witness students hanging around and coming up and speaking to them afterwards around their experiences of what they were living with at home. Yeah. And to me, there was a couple of students, and one of them was tearful with it, that, you know, parent had been drinking at home and they're living with it. And I was like, wow. Why have we not done this before?
Yeah,
this is the issue. Like, we need to target this. And I think especially at this what's called as FE or further education, there's a real need, a bit of a gap in the market really for, you know, direct targeted educational programs around, you know, teaching young people about the awareness of obviously drugs, but alcohol as well, you know, and the slippery slope with alcohol, because it's a creeper, and that's how
we exactly think about it.
It's a creeper, and it, before you know it, it's got the grip on you and you cannot get out. And I think, you know, the impact that had on me that day of those kids coming up to us and speaking to Dave and Sarah, it was like, wow, we need to deal with this. Like, we need something to put in place to manage this and deal with it.
Yeah.
So even though we're seeing lesser, the impact I'm finding, which is interesting, is the parents of these kids actually with the problem, and the kids often coming in saying, I don't know how to deal with this at home. Mm. I find really, really interesting, because that wasn't a conversation I ever had at their age.
Right. And you know, to add to that, of course, there's all the other layers of the increase in mental health issues. And, you know, God knows what the increase was over lockdown. I mean, I've seen some statistics that say it's off the scale. There's a isn't there like a year and a half, 18 months waiting list for CAMHS, for mental health services for kids. Yeah. I mean, what the hell? So, you know, I just wonder, wouldn't it be amazing if there was just more that could be done in schools to just help children be able to, you know, just start to notice emotions, yeah. be able to sit with emotions, be able to understand emotions, be able to accept that, you know, all of life is not feeling fantastic, but just reaching for something to numb out will always go bad, right?
Yeah,
you know, if we could just do that from an earlier age, just something along those lines, wouldn't it make a massive difference? But it has to come from people who are doing it themselves. And of course, most of us aren't, because we've had bloody years of being so emotionally immature, because that's what we did. As soon as we got, as you said, as soon as you were old enough to drink, you drank because that's the quick way of numbing from this bloody pain of everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So true. And it is, we've had like an influx of, we get a lot more students now that we refer over to our sort of student services portal. And we are having a lot more issues, I would say, in class with resettling them. I think there's this sort of, you know, it's taken me a long time this year to settle my groups and get them into the sort of routine. But then that's because they've been so out of routine for so long.
Of course, yeah.
Trying to give them a sense of family at the college as well is really important for me. I think that culture of feeling, you know, part of something and belonging somewhere, because actually they've spent so long at home in front of screens, you know,
being totally disconnected.
Completely disconnected. Now it's like, part of our job is to resettle them and get them connected and make them feel, you know, welcome. And but that is a really tough job, as well as dealing with all the other mental health stuff on top. But I do think there is, you know, there are gaps that we can be filling as educators, to try and plug the sort of issues that are going on. But it's going to take time. Take time and resources as well, you know.
Of course. Well, how amazing to have you there in the midst of it. It's brilliant that you're there shining your little light, right? Because that's gonna spill out, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, it really is. Just that it's going to ripple. It's going to have a ripple effect, you know. Yeah. And you'll probably never know the extent of the difference you make, because, you know, it just requires one kid, you know, or fellow teacher to just hear you make one comment, and you'll never know what they then take with them. You know, when some kind of shit hits the fan for them, they might just remember, you know, that you've shared how much better you feel and how your life's changed, you know.
Yeah, it's for me, it's all about communication, and it's about being really open and honest. And I think it's interesting, no students ever said to me, we they have conversations in the classroom and it comes up and they'll say to me, oh, you know, do you drink, miss? And I'm like, oh no, I don't drink, actually. They're like, what, not at all? And I say, no, I don't drink. I've chosen not to drink. And they're all like, they don't really ask much after that, because I think they're all a bit stunned that I don't. But I just find, you know, if they were to ask me, I think I'm at a stage now in my journey that I feel probably that I would be able to say to them, I would be open and honest. And I think the transparency of that as well could be, although shocking to start off with, I think it opens up the doors of actual, you know, well, okay, let's have other conversations.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about other things that are, you know, topical.
Exactly. Yeah,
so
totally.
I think it's to do with that. And the more I speak to people, the more I, you know, open up to people, which shocked me, because I was not one of these people that at the beginning I would have thought I could do that.
Yeah.
Now I think, you know, I feel like I've made that jump, and now I'm like, oh my God, I can see change. And it's
brilliant. I think what's great is, you know, that so I think when you're young, you can grasp quickly. Well, even when you're older, in fairness, you can grasp that someone who is at rock bottom needs, in inverted commas, to stop drinking. So when young people ask someone whether they drink, if the answer is no, the assumption in their mind will be, that's because you were an alcoholic at rock bottom. That'll be the assumption. Or you have a certain religion or cultural reason, right? And that's, for me, that's the change that needs to be made. We need to make this change so that when that question's asked, the answer is, well, yeah, I was never at rock bottom. You know, I was functioning okay. but man, is my life that better now? Yeah. You know, so that you can choose sobriety, so it can be a positive choice, and you don't have to wait till you're at rock bottom, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, that's got to be the message, isn't it? But we don't get that anywhere. You don't get that message at the GP or at the you don't get that message anywhere.
No,
you know, because if you go to a GP, they simply check that you aren't at rock bottom, you know, and you know, you're going to, hopefully they'll, you know, they'll grasp that very quickly. And as long as you're not, okay, you're good to go. I mean, you know, loads of people know I've said it all the time, but you know, the top tip given to me was have an alcohol-free day. Yeah. Oh, crikey. I wish I'd thought of that. I mean, for God's sake, have an alcohol-free day.
No.
Well, that'll really help with the bottle of wine a night, won't it? Oh, apart from one night. Don't be ridiculous. You know, the answer needs to be, doesn't it? Just, okay, you're not at rock bottom. Fantastic. Let's not let you get there.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, let's you. And it's so true. And I went to the doctors recently, had like a small procedure done. And interesting, you say about the doctors, the doctor turned around to me and said, to ease this, you might want to go home.
Oh, God, no.
And I laughed. Internally, I laughed. I was not in a fit state at that point to kind of make any comment. But I did laugh because I thought, oh, my goodness, you're talking to someone who has hit a place in their life that they can never do that again. And
Well, hold on a minute. You can reframe that. You would never want to do that again.
No.
If you could. You'd never want to. I've heard of people. Well, Claire Pooley talks about it, doesn't she? The fact that she had a treatment for breast cancer, and the doctor actually said, "You want to go home and have a glass of champagne now?"
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah. Oh my God! So tell me, they asked to rebalance medication. Then did they rebalance your medication? Now you're not drinking.
So I. The long and the short of it really with it is that I'm still on it. I'm quite open about that as well. I think I feel like it's something I need at the moment, whether that's because I'm still going through the process of not drinking, and I do believe that is part of it. I think even though I think it's 16 months now I'm at, and it's still in my head, it's still early, because I still feel like I haven't, you know, completely got through everything I need to get through yet. I haven't been to certain events.
Yeah, you haven't done all the firsts.
Though it's past a year, I think that's another misconception. I think, you know, okay, the year, well done, but I also think there's other things going on in that. I think it's getting through other things like holiday abroad. We've never
absolutely
been
abroad, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and it's few things like that. So I think with medication wise, for me at the moment, it's the right thing to be on it, but I know now that it is working and it's making a difference, because I'm not then counterbalancing that at night with a whole bottle of wine. It's hopefully working. It's magic.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being so honest and for doing the work you do. I think it's great, and I really appreciate you sharing your story. I think it really helped lots of people, because, you know, God knows there's so many women going through exactly that, aren't they? You know, getting home from work, just, you know, thinking that that's their treat, mixing it with medication, probably when they're a bit older than you. You know, then it'll be HRT into the mix as well. You know, and it's a trap. It's like a trap. It feels like it doesn't feel like there's a way out.
No, and that's exactly how I felt. And I think if there's anyone listening that is, you know, in a situation where you're a mom, or you're, you know, and I think you're under that stress, I honestly, I hate it saying it over and over again, but it's such a cliche, but it is the best thing, because that eradication of that nightmare is taken away, and it opens up so many things that I never thought possible.
And
it's even down to just the appreciation now of things that I've got, which, you know, I couldn't appreciate anything, because I was so caught up in my own world.
Yeah, me too. And it makes you so much more present as a parent, doesn't it? And you know, it genuinely is the best gift you have. Best gift you'll ever give to the kids, without a doubt. 100%. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Vicky. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing the story.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to seeing you. So, you know, we should have a chat in a year, right?
Yes.
And then and see what magic has been created. Because I'm absolutely sure you will find a way of of slipping some ripples in there that I will, you know, have that ripple effect and will change something on some level. And that's super exciting. And I think that's what everyone has to hang on to. If you've done this hard thing, it's not just for yourself. I mean, God knows you get a huge amount from it, but it is that just that shining that light. It has that ripple effect. It really does. And you'll never know how many lives you've touched, you know? So thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank
Cheers.
You.
So don't forget, if you're interested in that accountability package that I'm just about to launch, it's very low cost, it's very low commitment, as it were, very low time. You know, you really just have got to kind of, be held accountable by me every week minimum. Just drop me a message if it's something you're interested in and I'll send you the details. Follow me on Instagram if you're not already, at Janie Lee Grace. Just a reminder of a few events that are coming up. May the 7th, it's Sober by the Sea in Southend. That's where we create a vision board. We look at self-care. It doesn't matter what stage you're at. You can be sober curious or you might have been sober for years. It's usually a really lovely event. It's tiny though, so not very many spaces. So if you're interested in that, get in fairly quickly, please, if you will. It'd be lovely to meet a few people. We can hope for good weather. Ahead of that, Saturday, April 23rd, it's a Sober Club endorsed event in Edinburgh. It's our first Sober Club meetup in Edinburgh, hosted by a couple of Sober Club coaches, Elspeth and Gillian. So if you go to the soberclub.com /events, you'll find all of these. That's a little afternoon, kind of lunchtime event in Edinburgh. So it'd be lovely if we had any listeners in Scotland who want to go along. You don't have to be Sober Club members for any of this, by the way. So if you just want to, you know, rock up and just go and see what, I don't know, just go and have a look at what sober people look like. We're really quite normal. I've said before, the first time I went to a sober event, I was terrified. I actually hung around the car park for about half an hour before I dared go in. But, you know, people are really normal and it makes you feel okay again. And then we've got Shampley's coming up. I think it's in May. You'll have to check the details for that. Just finalising that one. And we're going to organise another Family Constellations event as well. Do join in whatever you can. And obviously, check out the Sober Club if you haven't already, thesoberclub.com. Always keep an eye on what's going on my other site as well, imperfectlynatural.com. It's got some great drinks to give away, some great competitions generally. Can you hear that wind noise? I told you it was really windy. That is ridiculous. I swear the studio is going to take off. There's some really nice drinks to give away. Drink mocktails. I've got a nice prize on there, I know for sure. I'm pretty sure there's going to be another couple of competitions coming on board very soon. And of course, there's always great competitions to win. Really lovely natural and organic skincare and wellness products, as I say, because of the other hat that I wear. So it's always worth having a look and entering, you know, some of those competitions. I do find that when people ditch the booze, you know, they slowly start to think about the other stuff too. You know, they slowly start to think about, what shall I put on my skin? Because I don't want to put skincare on that's got alcohol in it. You know, do I need supplements? Answer, yes, you probably do. In fact, you know, what should I eat? Well, really good, nutritious food, and definitely not artificial sweetness. So be really careful of that one. You know, don't kind of move over to diet drinks, whatever you do. There's a really good article in What Doctors Don't Tell You about artificial sweeteners. It's something I've been talking about forever and a day. I'm most definitely not a fan. My tip is never buy anything that says diet on it or low fat, because actually it just means that they're really restricted and they're usually full of a whole load of other crap that you don't need. But anyways, so yeah, there's lots of great products on there that I'm recommending. I don't sell anything. I've just written about them and shared a bit of info, and often we have some competitions because the Platinum Awards are open at the moment. So we also have a category for alcohol-free drinks. I'm hoping some of the brands will think about entering that. Always drop me a line if you want to let me know that you're ditching the booze. You've got to tell somebody. It can be me if you want. Keep in touch. If you've got any suggestions for guests for me, especially if you can hook me up with them, then please do. I'd love to hear who you'd like me to interview. I look forward to seeing you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.